Ladies and gentlemen, the time being just after 10 past 12, let's get our session underway today. My name is John Duravin. I'm from Swiss Re. I'm your chairman for today. And we're here, of course, to hear a presentation on a ComCare paper. Do we need the... So we're here today to hear a paper by, I think originally by Andrew McInerney and Mark Hurst of Finity Consulting on the ComCare self-insurance option, Mark 2. But Mark Hurst was unable to make it today, but we're very lucky to have Kerry Lee in Mark's place to join Andrew as one of our two presenters for today. A couple of points I'd like to mention before we start up. Kerry and Andrew intend to present for around about 20 minutes. They'll ensure that there's lots of time left for questions at the end, so please think of any questions for the end of their presentation. Also, they're quite happy to take any burning questions that any of you may have during the presentation, so please just put your hand up and feel free to ask away. But we will ensure that there's plenty of time left at the end. When you do ask any questions, please start by stating your name and your employer into the microphone. All of these sessions are being recorded, so we'd like to know who to attribute your question to. Okay, without further ado, let me introduce our two presenters for today. Andrew McInerney is a principal at Finity Consulting. He specialises in accident compensation with a particular focus on workers' compensation and asbestos. In his spare time, Andrew says he gets back into doing a little bit of CTP. So I think Andrew is obviously the actuary's actuary. In his spare time, CTP is his hobby. Our other presenter today is Kerry Lee. She is also a principal at Finity, also specialising in accident compensation. And since qualifying in 2011, Kerry says her hobbies are hiking, editorial duties for the Actuary magazine, and I think many of us will recognise Kerry and her photo from the Actuary Australia magazine, and finally watching the UFC, and someone, probably Kerry, is going to have to put me out of my misery here.
Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Oh my goodness, okay. Well, there's scope for a question for later on anyway. ladies and gentlemen, I believe we're going to hear from Kerry first, so please welcome Kerry Lee.
Okay, just because I'm so short, it's hard for me to stand behind the lectern and see everybody. So our paper is called the ComCare Self-Insurance Option Mark 2. So first of all, who's Mark? Mark Hurst, he's a principal at Finity, and he was also one of the authors of the 2007 original self-insurance paper, ComCare, that was presented at the Accident Comp seminar at the time. All right, but our paper, it doesn't actually have anything to do with him. What we'd like to do is provide sort of a reassessment of that 2007 paper, which essentially looked at the potential implications for state workers' comp schemes should employers exit to ComCare, as well as some of the cost implications for employers if they chose to do so. And given all the changes that have happened over the last 6 years to state schemes and the ComCare scheme, we thought that now, you know, would be a good time to provide that update. Okay, so I thought I'd start by providing a summary of our findings from 2007. Okay, so firstly, for OH&S, back then the frameworks across all the states were broadly comparable, although there were just a myriad of small minor differences. And so we concluded that, you know, there were significant advantages for an employer to bring all their OH&S under a single regime, which was the case for ComCare self-insurers at the time. We also found that the greatest difference in OH&S actually came through the way that it was enforced. So by this we mean all the states and territories had varying levels of proactive intervention rates and, you know, different numbers of enforcement notices issued, etc. ComCare, on the other hand, had limited resources dedicated to enforcement, and instead they've taken more of an advisory prevention approach. And secondly, we assessed the ComCare self-insurance option in terms of workers' comp for national employers. We found that, you know, there are, again, significant operational and practical advantages for employers working in a single framework across Australia, but that, you know, generally for a typical employer, if they were to move from state-based arrangements to ComCare, this would increase the cost of their claims, and this is mainly due to the more generous long-term weekly benefits under ComCare. And finally, all the states and territories have their own approach to dealing with employers exiting the schemes. So at the time, South Australia and Victoria both had exit fees imposed on any employers who wanted to switch over to ComCare. And these exit fees were designed to ensure that the schemes wouldn't be financially disadvantaged by their removal. And since then, although South Australia has removed these exit fees, you know, the existence of them and the uncertainty around them ultimately means that there's a barrier for employers who might be thinking about switching to ComCare. Okay, so after all these findings, what we thought were the implications for the scheme was that, you know, as long as there's no meaningful reform for the states to achieve consistency, in the end, more and more employers will simply leave. And we estimated that if 10% of a scheme were to move across to ComCare, then this would give, you know, a premium increase to that state scheme of around about 2.5%, which is a small impact. However, over the longer term, this would result in the schemes having the smaller and poorer risks. All right, so since then, there have been a lot of changes to ComCare that have the potential to change the attractiveness of it as a self-insurance option. So back in December 2007, the Labor government imposed a moratorium on all new non-Commonwealth employers who wanted to join ComCare, and that moratorium continues today. Then in 2008, there was a scheme review announced, which came up with about 20 recommendations from the Department of Education, Employment and Workplace Relations. And then in 2011, some of those recommendations were enacted. So, for example, reinstating coverage for off-site recess breaks, ongoing compensation for medical expenses, and strengthening OH&S enforcement. And then earlier this year, the Hanks review of the scheme was released. Hanks came up with over 100 recommendations of significant change to almost every part of the scheme. So although he came up with all these recommendations, I thought I'd just mention the four which have the greatest impact on the potential for employers to join ComCare. So firstly, you know, a big one, he recommended that the moratorium be removed, which would actually allow employers to get back into the scheme. Secondly, allowing group licenses, and ultimately that would reduce administrative costs for related companies. Hanks also recommended that the current competition test be replaced by what's called a national employer requirement, and he gave a few examples of what that might look like. So, for example, a national employer might be an employer that has staff in more than one state or territory, or might be an employer that has staff in every state and territory. Or it might be an employer that has operations in X states and territories, regardless of where their employees actually are. So previously, under the competition test, only a handful of employers were actually eligible to join ComCare. But, you know, if this recommendation goes through, then depending on what definition of national employer is adopted, it could open the floodgates for a very large number of employers to exit state schemes. And Hanks finally, he also recommended a whole raft of benefit changes. So, for example, changes in the step-downs for weekly benefits, changes to medicals, as well as more generous lump sums for higher WPI bands. And the work that we've done for some of our clients suggests that overall, for a typical employer, these would increase the cost of benefits. Now, it's worth noting that because ComCare, the scheme, has been operating at a loss for the last 3 years, and also premium rates have increased by, I think, on average 20% per annum during that time, we think that it's unlikely that these benefit changes will go through. All right, so that was ComCare. And now what about all the state schemes? So over the last 6 years, they've also seen a whole raft of benefit and scheme changes. And overall, the impact on claims costs expected to be an increase in Victoria, Western Australia and Tassie, and a decrease for all the other states. It's a bit of an aside for Queensland. The reduction in costs, they relate mainly to common law, while for New South Wales, I'm sure you're aware, there have been significant changes. There's been caps on weeklies and medicals, removal of journey claims, introduction of the week work capacity testing, as well as restrictions on lump sums. Okay, so all these changes, what does that actually mean for claims costs? Well, the chart shows for a notional employer how we might expect the cost differences between ComCare and the state schemes to move over since 2007. So in our 2007 paper, we estimated ComCare claims costs to be on average about 10% more expensive than the aggregate of the state schemes. And this is largely because of the more generous weekly benefits and prior to the removal of journey claims in ComCare. Since the exclusion of journey claims in ComCare, we thought that the differential would decrease down to around 5%. Oh, and I should note, this is dependent on the type of industry that the employer operates in and the mix of employees by state. Now, since 2007... we estimate that the impact of benefit changes in New South Wales would reduce claims costs by an average of about 15%, which is in line with what the scheme actuaries thought. So for an employer with operations in New South Wales, this would make the cost of their benefits cheaper as compared to ComCare benefits. And for all the other states, we assumed that all the benefit changes would roughly offset each other. So in this notional employer example, we roughly estimate that ComCare would now be about 10 to 15% more expensive than with the state schemes. And finally, if those Hank's recommendations for benefit changes are introduced, then we expect this would increase the claims cost by another 5 to 10%. So as a disclaimer, these results are indicative only and will vary significantly from company to company, and they may actually vary significantly from these averages shown, depending on a whole range of things such as balance of business by jurisdiction, employee type, injury mix, as well as industry. All right, so for an employer who's actually considering a switch to ComCare, obviously cost is just going to be one of the factors they should consider. So now I'll pass you on to Andrew, who will talk about the whole range of other things an employer should think about.
Okay, so I'm going to go through then two parts. Firstly, looking at what the self-insurers are likely to consider before they would consider going to ComCare. And then secondly, well, what would this all mean for schemes if things do change? So firstly, if you're an employer who's interested, well, you can only join ComCare if you're eligible. So at the moment, there is still a moratorium, and the legislation is that there is a competition test. So unless both of those things change, the world actually doesn't look very different to what it does at the moment. If the Hanks recommendation is adopted of moving from a competition test to a national employer test, that's when the world can start looking quite a bit different to what it does now, and potentially a hell of a lot more employers can start looking at the ComCare option. The second consideration then is benefits. So, and you're going to notice that over the next few slides we've got a little symbol in the bottom right corner of, is this a good thing, or would employers tend to view it as a good thing? So one of the things about moving to ComCare is that you get consistency in your benefits across all the states. And fair degree of employers actually cite this as something that's important to them when they're considering this option. So if you're a genuine national employer working in four or five different states, it can be quite an administrative hassle to have to deal with all the different rules and what goes on everywhere else, particularly when communicating with your own workforce about kind of why you get treated differently to someone in that other state over there who gets benefits once you've been cut off. So that employer equity is something that people note. And obviously that creates some simplicity for them in managing their claims. Number three then is the claim cost. So Kerry's been through all that with the, the external environment. It's very much employer dependent. So what we've quoted here, what Kerry quoted earlier, that ComCare is likely to cost something around 15% more than a representative employer across Australia, could vary significantly depending on whether or not you're in New South Wales and just a little bit somewhere else, or if you're in South Australia with just a little bit somewhere else. So those differentials very much depend on who you are, what you do, and where you employ people. It's probably enough said. So I guess that last step that Kerry noted of whether or not the Hanks recommendations for benefit changes will be adopted, it seems unlikely at the moment because of the change in government that there would be any willingness to increase the level of ComCare benefits at the current time. That's pure hypothesis, and I don't know if there's anyone from ComCare here who might wish to present a view otherwise, but anyway, that's our read of the landscape at the moment. Number four is WHS, the Workplace Health and Safety. This is one that previously was a big ticket reason for moving to ComCare, was the ability to move to a single regime and not have to deal with all the state-based regulators. What has happened since 2007? So the previous OH&S Act would have brought all your employees under the single OH&S regime, but in 2011 the WHS Act does not allow that. So essentially if you move to ComCare now, all your WHS is regulated by the state still, and that's a significant disincentive to a lot of employers to move to ComCare, because they do like the knowing they've got the one regulator, the one set of rules they need to apply with, and one change in government that potentially moves the whims about rather than up to seven or eight different ones. The top bullet point there is just for noting that, yes, ComCare does tend to have low rates of WHS enforcement, but those statistics are also a little bit... I guess they need to be treated with care, given the workforce that ComCare deals with, so take it with a grain of salt. Number five, then, is expenses. So this is kind of the external expenses to the employer. There's a big admin cost to being self-insured in three or four or five different states, so cutting that down and just having to do that once is financially attractive to an employer, so that's something that they would consider in whether or not they were to go to ComCare. And also further is whether or not they could make savings with their claims management function. Simplicity, probably said enough on that. The only other thing is that not just do you save expenses in terms of the things you have to do, you probably also save quite a bit of internal expense and management overhead of not having to be aware of what's going on in all these different schemes. Number seven then is happy employees. So ComCare benefits do tend to be a little bit more generous to some workforces, probably to the unions that represent those workforces, that can be a good thing. And I guess I've touched on earlier the questions of fairness and equity, that everyone comes under the same set of rules. So wrapping all that up, what would an employer be thinking? Well, it depends on who you are. So there's clearly a couple of positives, the simplicity, the common benefits of moving to ComCare and what it means for your employees. Previously, the WHS would have been over on the left as well. That's one we've moved across to the right-hand side now, that that win that they would have previously had from moving to ComCare isn't there. The eligibility, I guess that's the question that we're all waiting to see what happens, and claims costs, so that the financial cost of paying people is likely to be more under ComCare than it would for most employers under a state-based scheme. So I guess if you're an employer making the decision, you really need to go back and work out, well, what are the questions, what's my motivation for this? So that I don't think there's a single answer as to whether or not ComCare is the right thing to do for an employer. It's probably less attractive than it was 6 years ago. It is the current state of play. Now I'm going to move on and just have a quick talk about what this might mean for the state schemes. So I guess it's, I haven't actually written it up on the slides, but I should say it. It's implied that if nothing changes, then the findings from our previous review don't really change either, that you're not going to get more than about 10% at quite an extreme scenario of employers would be eligible under the competition test. So you're really not going to get any mass exodus of employers going to ComCare under the competition test. If the national employer test is bought in, that's when the world starts to look quite a bit different. Because we think that that could cover a hell of a lot more employees than what are covered currently. I guess it's always important to remember when you're talking about self-insurance, not all employers do take up the option, even though it's theoretically available. There's a hell of a lot that say, no, not right for us, for a whole range of reasons. And when they're looking at that decision, I guess we've been through quite a few things there that they would think about. But also that what else would impact on the state schemes is how much self-insurance they have currently. So the pool of employers that would be eligible to move to ComCare, a lot of those would be the same ones who are currently self-insured under the state base. So that would mean, say, New South Wales and South Australia have less to lose than somewhere like Victoria and Queensland. And then also that the financial costs will depend on where the workforce is biased toward. So if you're currently in the lower cost scheme, then you're probably in a better position than you would be if you were a higher cost scheme. So Hank's very clearly said, it's not my job to tell you what a national employer is, it's a matter of government policy. He did go on, though, to give four examples. So Kerry's sort of said those before. Focus on the top two, because they're really the boundary points. The top one is a corporation employing staff in more than one state or territory, which kind of interpreted as a pretty broad test. The information is hard to find, or we struggle to find it anyway, that says how many employers would meet that definition. We've looked at quite a few different things and cut it different ways, and as a putting it out there number, we've said that could be up to 35 to 45% of the workforce. We'd be interested in views. If anyone thinks that exceedingly silly, then certainly speak up and tell us. But that's more or less saying anyone who's currently a kind of large employer and a reasonable share of moving down into what are called medium-sized employers could meet that test if they wanted to. It's not that difficult to set up an office interstate for one or two people if you want to appear to be employing staff in more than one state. The second line then is employing in each state or territory, which is a much narrower test. Certainly broader than the current competition test, and it could actually mean some of the current licensees wouldn't meet that test, or haven't been through all of them. And our guess is that that would mean perhaps 10 to 15% of the workforce could meet that definition. The other two, are variations on that, and so depending on what was adopted, could be anywhere between that range. So what's that mean, I guess, to bring it all together? If your state scheme and the very broad test is brought in, I imagine you would notice losing sort of something up to 30% of your premium volume. However, it doesn't really change the dynamics of the premium rates that you would have to charge. So, yes, there would be some fixed overheads that don't get spread around. Yes, you would probably end up with the smaller and slightly more high-cost employers. But if you run the maths on that, taking out some what I would consider to be a pretty hefty theoretical cross-subsidy of 15% on 25% of your workforce, you're still only looking at about 7 or 8% increases in premium rates. So it doesn't undermine the viability of the state schemes. Yes, you would lose a lot of premium, or you could lose a lot of premium, but your existence isn't threatened. The bottom bullet point's probably one that's, anyway, I think a bit subtle, but I imagine that if the broad test was brought in, that would create quite a bit of pressure on schemes to try and maintain their cost relativity to Comcare. That would both mean that you as a scheme would want to be quite careful in lifting your benefits, because that would make you less affordable, but it would also mean if Comcare was to reduce their benefits, then you may have to consider a need to follow suit, because through no action of your own, suddenly you are a less financially attractive option than what you were previously. What does the future hold? Don't know. That's the short answer. It'll be interesting to see. So we have had a change of government. They have been very quiet in terms of what they've said about their intent for Comcare and for workplace relations more generally. I guess that's not surprising given where they came unstuck previously. There were a couple of questions that Paul O'Connor got asked at a Senate Estimates Committee this year, but really nothing that gave anything away to us anyway on our read of it. How's time, John? Hand over to questions at that point.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Kerry. And we have exactly our regulation 10 minutes left for comments and questions. I remind you again, please state your name at the microphone there and your employer, and then contribute your comment or question. And I'd ask anyone with comments to keep them to not more than about 2 minutes, just so we can have a wide participation in the discussion. You would like to ask the first? Jeff.
Jeff Atkins from Finity. Andrew, in Comcare, as I understand it, disputed claims are dealt with at the Administrative Appeals Tribunal.
Correct.
I assume that's the same for self-insurers?
Yes.
Is that a pro or a con?
That's certainly a con. The AAT has very slow resolution of disputes. I believe it's the slowest in the country. Is that what I'm looking? Yep. And you're kind of looking at, 9-10 months for an average type dispute, I think is my recollection. So in a long tail scheme, which Comcare's benefit structure certainly is, that can be a real risk in terms of discouraging return to work and really slowing the process down.
Bruce Harris from Employers Mutual. I suppose my question is, with the pressure on Comcare premium rates and reductions in benefits in New South Wales and Queensland, is there actually reverse pressure with national players thinking about going back to the state schemes?
Great question. I had that thought this morning when I was trying to jot some notes on the plane, and I don't know. I would think that... Anyway, you'd need to talk to some self-insurers. But yes, it's a possibility. And I think that's something that that would be interesting to observe over the next little while, particularly employers who have a strong bias to New South Wales. My read is that that's headed toward a 1% scheme. So if you're not able to manage your costs in Comcare, I don't know, to below probably 1.2 or something like that, then that financial differential becomes pretty significant. So, it's certainly a good question. It's a thought that occurred to me as well, Bruce. Yeah, like that.
Andrew Holton, Taylor Fry. These are really more comments, though. You might treat them as questions if you've got a different point of view, but I sometimes wonder whether it's not overblown, the idea that it's important to a national employer to have consistent benefits across its workforce. I sometimes wonder, is it not more important for, let's say, a retailer who operates in South Australia to be offering benefits that are similar in structure to the shop next door, rather than be anticipating a comparison with what's going on in another state. So I'm not so sure I'd have a completely happy face next to that one if I were doing an equivalent presentation. Another thing that strikes me about Comcare in comparison to some, at least, of the other state schemes is the length of the tail. Mm. And although quite often when you hear discussion about comparison between schemes, the comparison centres on expected cost, I think in practice the bigger difficulty for self-insurers is volatility in reported cost from one year to the next. And the longer tail schemes lend themselves towards having much greater volatility than the shorter tail ones. So just a couple of extra things that I think, well, particularly if you take, say, a Queensland-centric employer. So two comments, although you may want to counter-comment.
No, I think in relation to your first one, that certainly that comparison of what's the guy next door doing is something that people think about, but I'd probably go further and say if they can get a competitive advantage, they'll take it. So I think you use South Australia as the example. So if your competitor's paying 2% more than you are, you'll take it because that just flows straight through to your bottom line. And I guess the same comment applies when it's the other way, because you've got to make that ground up to get your profit targets. And in relation to the tail, absolutely. And I think that's certainly the role of the actuary, if you're going to be advising anyone in this space, is that on a long tail scheme, you're going to be building up some big liabilities over, assuming you intend to do this for the long term, you're not just trying to make a short term play here to save some money, you're going to end up with some pretty big liabilities on your book, because occasionally you're going to get the big one. And I certainly think there's a few CFOs around who probably don't understand the dynamics of that until it hits them. I don't disagree at all with that, Andrew.
Hi, Matthew Hinks from BlueScope Steel. We are considering the Comcare option ourselves. We have pretty much an idea about what our claims cost increase are going to be, and they're pretty much in line with what was presented before. The savings percentage on the WHS side, has that been measured?
Not by me. No. I'd be interested in your views, though. Yeah. If you've got anything.
But like, I'm a claims person myself, and we're quite horrified by some of the increases. So, just wanted to see, you know, on the other side, is the company going to save us some money on that side?
Can't give you an answer. Sorry, no, I can't. I don't know if anyone else in the room wants to have a go. Sorry.
Andrew, perhaps while the next person is thinking of their question, I might be allowed to ask one. We heard from Paul O'Connor of Comcare this morning that one third of the Comcare outlays to Australian public servants and members of the ACT government were in respect of mental claims, and that proportion is much higher than applies typically in the private sector. If you're considering the Comcare self-insurer option, is that something that you should be concerned about, or do you see that as being more a function of the nature of the public service and the ACT government?
I think it's the latter, and my presentation two slots ago was actually thinking about that a little bit. I don't think the legislation for Comcare is that different in terms of how the test's applied. So yes, you have a very different dispute resolution process, which might be important, but from the information I've seen, it certainly suggests that there's strong differences in the stress claim incidence and duration when you're in the public sector compared to the private sector. That's a suggestion, that's not evidence-based, because the data's not well enough presented to make that conclusion, but that's certainly what it looks like.
Julie Evans from WorkSafe in Victoria. I'm interested if there's a, I don't know whether it's myth or reality, but a perception perhaps that self-insurers quite like the lump sum option to commute benefits or avoid the tail, and whether what your view is on the people who are either have gone to Comcare or who are contemplating it, and whether it's whether they really appreciate not just that cost aspect, but the whole management aspect of a tail.
I've certainly seen some employers that strongly make use of commutations, redemptions, whatever they are in the relevant scheme, because they don't like tail. Probably one thing I would say they do well is that they actually deal with that early. They tend not to let that drift to the kind of 3, 4, 5 years, which I think really comes back to the fact that schemes have to work in a systemic way, which means they can't target those claims early that they know. You know this claim is still going to be there in 3 or 4 or 5 years if we don't do something. The self-insured employers are very able to identify those, and yes, so they will go at them with money to get them off the books. I've certainly seen that. Not all, but some do. I'm not at all trying to suggest that paying lump sums is the best answer to long-term claims, but I've seen that it done that way. Sorry, was there another part to the question?
Just whether without that real option in comp, or do you go outside of workers' comp?
Or yeah, I think it kind of ties in with what Andrew was saying before, that in Comcare you don't have that option. You're very constrained in terms of how you can deal with your tail. So unless you're genuinely focused on getting people back to work, it would be quite a significant shift to the mindset that some case managers would have and some employers would have. Yeah.
Okay, I think we have 30 seconds for one last brief question.
Jeff's played his hand.
That's or if,
but,
well, given that Jeff seems to be hungry, we might give everyone a 30-second early mark. But ladies and gentlemen, before you go, can I just remind you, please, to complete the hard copy feedback form, or provide some feedback on the presenters from today's session via the app that we've been told about a bit earlier. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, can you please join with me.
John, can I have one more?
Oh, yeah, please.
No, I just wanted to say very quickly, I've had a bit going on in my life in the last few months with a new baby. I just want to say a special thank you to Kerry. We wouldn't have been here today if she hadn't mucked in and got it all done. So, thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Kerry. And I understand that...